There are many astounding numbers and statistics that accompany the legacy of country music legend Merle Haggard. There are his 38 number one hits. There's his 50-plus year career remaining relevant in country music. There are his 66 studio albums recorded and the millions of records sold. But the one Merle Haggard statistic that perhaps intrigues people the most is that before his music career took off in earnest, Haggard was rumored to have escaped from jail an incredible 17 times during his troubled youth growing up near Bakersfield, California. 17 times! It wasn't the severity of Haggard's offenses that ultimately found a judge sentencing Merle to serve hard time in one of California's most notorious prisons, San Quentin. It was an attempt to try and scare the petty criminal straight and make sure he didn't escape yet again. But is this escape statistic truly to be believed? 17 times? Let's do some digging through the public records, consult Merle's memoirs, and use a new definitive biography on Merle to try and once and for all refute or verify if Merle Haggard really did escape incarceration an incredible 17 times. Let's first establish that the source of the information about Merle Haggard's startling record of jail escapes is Merle Haggard himself. Along with talking about his numerous escapes in his memoirs, Merle told Vanity Fair in 2010 about being sent to San Quentin, quote, "I wasn't really that bad a guy. They just couldn't hold me anywhere else. I escaped 17 different times, so they sent me there because I was an escape risk," unquote. Merle also made other similar statements over the years. Before we get into just how much of a juvenile delinquent Merle Haggard was, let's first try to answer why he had chosen a life of petty crime. Born April 6, 1937 in Oildale, California, which was considered the poor suburb of Bakersfield, Merle Haggard was raised in a house that had been built out of a converted boxcar by his genuine Okie parents who'd migrated from Oklahoma during the Depression. Merle had two siblings, brother Lowell and sister Lily, but they were both significantly older than Merle. They were both teenagers by the time Merle was born and were adults by the time he was in middle school. That made Merle the baby of the clan. And despite his mother Flossie May being a very devout Christian, both his mom and his dad, James Francis Haggard, tended to baby young Merle during his upbringing, allowing him much more latitude than they did his older siblings, even if they couldn't really spoil him due to the poor conditions he grew up in. Very early on, Merle began skipping school and starting mischief, but the rod was spared. Merle just had trouble paying attention or staying focused. These days, we'd say young Merle had ADHD. Also, while sitting on his father's lap listening to the radio, Merle found favor early on with the songs of the singing brakeman, the man many consider the father of country music, Jimmy Rogers. His songs about riding trains and tunes like In the Jailhouse Now instilled young Merle with a rambling fever that he would carry with him the rest of his life. Many people heard Jimmy Rogers' songs and enjoyed them as theater. From an early age, Merle heard them and wanted to live them out. Haggard's world was especially hit hard and turned upside down when his father died of a brain hemorrhage when he was just 9 years old. Blaming himself for the death from a strange sense of guilt, and with his mother Flossie May left to try and wrangle him as a single mother who had to take a full-time job to support the household, Merle quickly went astray. Yes, Merle Haggard's life was very much like a country song. At age 11, Merle Haggard broke the law for the first time when, after school, he and his friend named Billy Thorpe filled pillowcases with some random supplies and, like hobos, jumped a freight train. Because the train car they tried to jump was locked, they had to hold on to the outside all the way to Fresno, where they arrived freezing and scared. A Yard Bull security officer found them and took the two boys into custody. Merle's older brother, Lowell, drove their mom, Flossie May, to Fresno to retrieve the young boys, and Flossie convinced a Fresno detective to not press charges, saying that Merle's father had worked for the railroad, which was true, and the boy was just taking after him. No charges were ever filed. Much of Merle Haggard's early run-ins with the law had to do with being picked up by truant officers for cutting classes at Oildale Standard Middle School. On one such occasion, Merle was caught trying to steal a car. He was never charged for the attempted auto theft, but he was expelled from school and went to live with his aunt to attend Arvin Middle School south of Bakersfield. Merle dropped out almost immediately and ended up back in Oildale. When Merle was 14, he and one of his best friends named Dean Rowe convinced two girls from school to hop a freight train with them to Las Vegas. Merle was reported to be quite a dashing young man, and of course quite dangerous, and was pretty good at convincing girls to do just about anything. The girls came along, but the freight train they hopped ended up being bound for Los Angeles, not Las Vegas. When they got to Los Angeles, Merle stole a car in the train station's parking lot, and they drove it all the way to 5 miles outside of Nevada before it ran out of gas. The parents of the girls had reported the two minors missing, and an officer found them all on the side of the road. Merle Haggard and Dean Rowe spent a couple of weeks in jail, Merle's first real stint behind bars. But there was no escape plot then, and eventually Merle and Dean Rowe were let out on lesser truancy charges. Merle's first real escape came just a few days after the failed Las Vegas trip, and once again involved truancy. According to school records, Merle only spent 10 days in Bakersfield High School his entire freshman year. So trying to scare him straight, they sent Merle to one of California's road camps. Not exactly prison, but definitely not freedom. Road camps were set up for lesser criminals where they could earn moderate wages working on road construction around California, while being housed and fed better than your average prison inmate. It was still no life for Merle Haggard, though. He remained there for 5 days before sneaking out and stealing a car to return to Bakersfield. After this first escape, this is when Merle says his real beginning of trouble with the law commenced. Police didn't pursue Merle the escapee at first. They instead worked with the Bakersfield High School guidance counselor, Fred Robinson, to have Haggard assigned to the California Youth Authority's juvenile hall, where hopefully he could be put back on the straight and narrow. The very first day there, Merle walked right out the front door and went back home to Oildale. This was his second official escape. A free man once again, Merle and his friend and fellow guitar player Bob Teague decided to join the Marines while on a drunken bender. Bob Teague had already joined the Marines once when he was 14 and spent 2 years in service before they figured out he'd lied about his age and kicked him out. When the two didn't show up for basic training, the FBI came looking for them. Lucky for Merle and Bob Teague, though, they'd used fake IDs to enlist, so they were never found. Instead, the two hitchhiked to Texas to try and find Lefty Frizzell in Corsicana, where he supposedly lived at the time. They made it the entire 1,500 miles to Texas, only to find out that Lefty Frizzell had recently moved to Southern California, where they had just hitchhiked from. Making their way back from Texas to Los Angeles by once again hitchhiking, Merle and friend Bob Teague were in the Lincoln Heights neighborhood looking for a ride back to Bakersfield when two police cars and four officers surrounded them, guns drawn. After roughing up the two teenagers, they took them to jail on suspicion of robbing a nearby liquor store. In this instance, it was a crime Merle Haggard did not commit. The cops told the two young men they were to be arraigned and would probably spend 15 years in prison. But after about a week languishing in jail, the real robbers were caught, and Merle and Bob Teague were let free. Back in Bakersfield, Merle stayed out of trouble for only 9 days before skipping school had the truant officer arresting him once again. This time, Merle was sent to the Fred C. Nellis Youth Correctional Facility for Boys in Whittier, California, on the outskirts of Los Angeles. It was more like a prison than a reform school, with bars on the windows, a barbed wire fence around the yard, and a boot camp regimen. After being there for a month, Merle made his third escape while on a work detail clearing brush from a nearby field. He hid in the woods all night, and then the next morning tried to make for the highway. The police caught him almost immediately, and he was sent back to the facility. After doing his time in Whittier, Merle returned briefly to Bakersfield, but soon left for Modesto, where friend Bob Teague was working in the fields. There, Merle Haggard worked odd jobs and eventually played his first official gig at the age of 15 at a local club with Bob Teague in support. But after the gig, three guys waiting outside the bar jumped Merle and Bob, probably in a dispute involving women. The cops came by and arrested them all. Merle and Bob spent 3 days in jail before a judge let them free, and they returned to Oildale just in time for Thanksgiving. But before Merle could partake in any turkey, he was once again arrested by truant officers for the 2 months he'd spent in Modesto instead of in school. This time Merle was sent to the Preston School of Industry, which looked like a castle and was a former halfway house. There was little difference between Preston and a legitimate prison. Instead of reforming Merle, it officially criminalized him. The first time he was let out, he met up with another kid he'd met on the inside, who was released on the same day. The two committed a robbery and assaulted a kid who reportedly had an emotional disability. It was arguably the first serious crime and the worst crime of Merle's criminal career. Haggard got picked up afterwards and was sent back to Preston for 15 months, where he turned 16. After this stint, perhaps Merle was rehabilitated to some extent, though it probably helped that he had also come of age where truant officers could no longer chase him around town. Either way, Merle's criminal escapades were put on hold for a while, and he started putting the foundations of his career in country music together. Though the short version of the Merle Haggard origin story says he didn't really get his start in music until he got scared straight in San Quentin prison, he'd already started making a name for himself before hitting the big house. Not long after being released from the Preston School of Industry, Haggard went to see Lefty Frizzell perform at the Rainbow Room in Bakersfield. Merle's old friend and guitar player Bob Teague barged into Lefty Frizzell's dressing room with Merle Haggard in tow like he owned the place, and told Lefty he should hear this young Merle kid sing. An impromptu audition transpired right there in the dressing room, and Frizzell was so impressed, he allowed the young Merle Haggard to go out and perform a couple of songs for the packed Rainbow Room crowd. Merle played a Jimmy Rogers song and a Hank Williams song, and left the crowd wanting more. It was Merle Haggard's first big break. Soon he started playing pickup guitar gigs in Bakersfield, including one for Tommy Duncan, as word of this singing and picking kid from Oildale began to spread. Merle was working potato farms and oil fields by day, and playing occasional rhythm guitar gigs in Bakersfield's hopping honky-tonks at night. Now married young to his first wife Leona with a kid on the way, Merle was hanging out drinking with a friend of his named Dennis, when on a whim, they decided to steal a car for the fun of it, drive to Reno, and make it back before morning. They found a nearly new 1956 Olds 88 and took to the highway. When Merle came up on two semis driving slow, he promptly passed them on the left. Between the two trucks was a California Highway Patrol officer. That's the reason the trucks were driving so slow. Soon, Merle was standing in front of a judge that had obtained a copy of Merle's rap sheet, which was mostly clean over the last couple of years, but still had a long list of priors. He sentenced Merle to a year in Ventura County Jail. Merle didn't escape, but he did get out a few months early for good behavior. He worked as a short order cook in the jail's mess hall and was let out on May 1, 1957, a few weeks after his 20th birthday and a month after the birth of his first child, a daughter named Dana. Now back home and with an extra mouth to feed, Merle and some buddies cooked up a scheme to steal scrap metal from one scrapyard and sell it to another. The first time they tried the ruse, they got caught, and Merle Haggard was sentenced to 90 days at a road camp. After 5 days, he made what would be his fourth escape and hopped a freight train out of Bakersfield. That train took Merle all the way to Utah and other parts, and he continued to hop freight trains to here and there, knowing if he went back home, he would end up in jail. He also reportedly had a rather harrowing experience when he got into a fight with some hobos over a can of peas. Eventually, Merle ended up in Eureka, California on the coast, where he was arrested by local police who found his warrant, and he was returned to Bakersfield, where he was ordered to serve the rest of his 90-day road camp sentence. After being discharged from the road camp, Merle made his first demo recording and presented it to the Bakersfield-based Tally Records, looking for his first big break into country music. Being told he sounded too much like the current Bakersfield star Buck Owens, a dejected Merle thought his prospects for making it in music were over. So hearing about jobs in New Mexico, and now with a second kid on the way, Merle decided to point his nose east once again. But since Haggard didn't have enough money to get to New Mexico, he decided to knock off a local Shell station where he'd once worked. Slyly switching out the locks of the station during the day, he came back that night wearing his old Shell station uniform and cleaned out the cash register, using the proceeds to purchase a used car for the New Mexico trip with a few buddies. He never worked in New Mexico, though. By the time Merle and his buddies got there, the jobs were all gone. The buddies took off to Texas in the used car, and Merle hopped a freight train and headed back to Bakersfield. Merle had made it back to California for Christmas Eve, and this is where his final and fateful crime occurred, and it was quite a comical one for everyone except Merle. While hanging out drunk with a buddy of his named Mickey, they decided to knock off a local restaurant called Fred and Jean's Cafe. They drove to the restaurant and tried to jimmy the back door, only to find it was already opened. Darting inside, they started figuring out what to steal when they discovered the restaurant was still open and full of patrons and employees. The owner chased the would-be burglars out the front door, and they took off down the street. At the first stop sign, a highway patrolman pulled them over. Fearing he was headed back to jail, Merle jumped out of the car and sprinted for the train depot so he could hop a freight out of town. But no trains were running because it was Christmas Eve. Meanwhile, the owner of the Shell station Merle had knocked off previously had put two and two together, and Merle was now fingered as the perpetrator in that crime as well. In the Bakersfield jail on Christmas Day awaiting arraignment, Merle waited for the right moment and literally walked right out the front door. Perhaps in the Christmas spirit, the chief of police had forgotten to lock things down. This was officially Merle's fifth escape from jail. When Merle made his way to his older brother Lowell's house, the police were there waiting in the weeds, threw the cuffs on him, and this time made sure there was no escape. Merle Haggard was shipped to the Chino Guidance Center, where he spent 7 weeks, including being evaluated by psychiatrists before appearing in court. Looking over Merle's rap sheet, and specifically his history with escapes, the judge decided to throw the book at him. With his mother Flossie May in the audience hoping for leniency, the judge sentenced Merle Ronald Haggard to up to 15 years in California's most notorious maximum security prison, the Big House, San Quentin. This is where Merle hatched a would-be sixth escape attempt, if we're to believe Merle's account. Haggard worked in the prison's furniture factory with a man named Jimmy Rabbit Kendrick, who was in for bank robbery. Along with Merle's cellmate named Sam, they hatched a scheme to hide in a large 1,500-pound judicial desk being made in the furniture factory. Once the desk was done and crated up, they would be shipped with the desk outside of San Quentin's walls to San Francisco, where it was bound. Nobody had escaped from San Quentin for 13 years prior, but as the day of the escape came closer, Merle got cold feet. He eventually was given guitar privileges in prison and would regularly play for his fellow inmates who helped convince Haggard he could be a country star once he was released, a fate Merle couldn't fulfill if he escaped and remained a wanted man. According to Haggard, his friend Rabbit eventually went through with the escape attempt successfully. 2 weeks after his escape, Rabbit shot and killed a highway patrolman named Richard Duval and was returned to San Quentin with a death sentence. Jimmy Rabbit Kendrick was put to death on November 3, 1961, according to prison records, And in his memoirs, Merle states that it was one of the most vivid memories of his entire life, watching his friend being led from his death row cell to the gas chamber. Merle also gives the experience credit for changing his entire perspective on life. However, Merle was actually released from San Quentin a year before Rabbit's execution on November 3, 1960. So either Merle's memory is wrong, or the prison records are. What's for sure is the incident had a profound effect on Merle. The question is if he actually witnessed it firsthand, or if he got it mixed up with another friend he made on the inside, Carl Chessman, who was a famous death row inmate who wrote 4 books and is one of the few American inmates ever executed who never committed murder himself. Haggard met Chessman when they were both in solitary confinement and spoke to each other through a ventilation shaft. Chessman was executed on May 2, 1960. The execution of both Chessman and Jimmy Rabbit Kendrick became the inspiration for Merle Haggard's song, Sing Me Back Home. Of course, another huge inspiration Merle Haggard received while at San Quentin is when Johnny Cash came to play on New Year's Day, 1960. Often this date is represented wrong in country history as 1959. Johnny Cash did play San Quentin in 1959 as well, but Haggard at that time did not have the right privileges to be able to attend. It wasn't until 1960 when Haggard could sit in the audience and see his future friend perform. Before the performance, Haggard had always thought of Cash as kind of corny, but afterwards, that all changed. Haggard recalls that Cash, quote, chewed gum, looked arrogant, and flipped the bird to the guards, everything the prisoners wanted him to do. He was a mean mother from the South who was there because he loved us. I became a Johnny Cash fan that day. He had the right attitude, unquote. And appreciate, this was all nearly a decade before Johnny Cash's famous live albums from San Quentin and Folsom Prison. Once out of San Quentin, there was one more final brush with the law for Merle, and it could have meant the end of his career before it ever officially began. Right about the time Merle had finally found the favor of Fuzzy Owen, who was the steel guitar player and co-owner of Tally Records who signed Merle to his first record deal, Haggard got caught shoplifting at a liquor store. If charges were pressed, Merle could have gone back to San Quentin for the rest of a 15-year sentence he was officially only out on parole for. Luckily, though, Fuzzy Owen stepped in and quote-unquote worked it out with the store owner, keeping the cops out of the matter. In some respects, you could possibly consider the shoplifting incident Merle's sixth escape, or consider some of the other incidents where he evaded punishment or incarceration escapes from justice as well. But combing through the different criminal enterprises of Merle Haggard's somewhat bumbling criminal career, it's conclusively impossible to get to 17 actual escapes, whether they were from road camps, juvenile detention centers, jail, or prison. So where does that 17 number come from? The number 17 does add up to the amount of criminal enterprises Merle Haggard got caught up in during his young adult life. Again, maybe you could say he quote-unquote escaped because he never faced any serious consequences, San Quentin notwithstanding, but the number of actual escapes is closer to the single digits. This isn't to call Merle Haggard a liar, or anyone else. SavingCountryMusic.com, where Country History X emanates from, reported on Merle Haggard's 17 escapes numerous times over the years without investigating it further either. Lots of media outlets and historical accounts have. It's more a symptom of Merle Haggard misremembering things, and maybe a little bit of embellishment, which, hey, is littered throughout country history. It was really the 2022 definitive biography called The Hag, The Life, Times, and Music of Merle Haggard, written by Mark Elliott, that has helped put Merle Haggard's escapes in context and has fingered that 17 number as the entries on Haggard's rap sheet. But this should in no way diminish Merle Haggard's mystique. Merle Haggard did live a life of petty crime, did do hard time, along with hopping trains and hitchhiking rides that all led to him being able to write and sing all those songs from a first-person perspective. We would have never heard songs like Mama Tried and Sing Me Back Home if it wasn't for Merle's wayward youth. But he also didn't really ever do anything that would be so morally reprehensible that it would rise to be a strike against his overall character and be irredeemable. Especially considering how, as soon as his career took off, Merle put his criminal past behind him for good. On March 14, 1972, then Governor of California and soon to be President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, officially pardoned Merle Haggard for all of his past offenses. Though Merle wasn't facing any real legal jeopardy at the time, the pardon did help him with things like leaving the country on tour and such, and Merle was always appreciative for it. As some like to point out, Merle's middle name was Ronald, so the two shared that as well. In 2015, Merle Haggard also received an honorary diploma from Bakersfield High School, even though, as has been documented, he barely attended class at all, and Haggard's truancy is what helped lead to his life of crime. But despite his criminal past, Merle Haggard went on to become a role model for many Americans and for people with troubled pasts all around the world. From a dirt-poor upbringing during the Depression by Okie parents, to a petty life of crime, to one of the most important artists in country music history, Merle Haggard embodies the country music redemption story. He rose from the ashes, fought off his own demons, and despite his early trespasses, left this world a better place than how he found it. The life of Merle Haggard was country music incarnate. Country History X is a living, breathing history of the country music genre told through the wild, weird, offbeat, inspiring, heartbreaking, unbelievable, but completely accurate stories of the music and its stars, songwriters, side players, and proprietors. Brought to you by veteran country music journalist Trigger of SavingCountryMusic.com.